We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
This is a battle of worldview.
And we activate.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Long time no hear. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you so much. What would I do without Bobby? Instead of long time no see, long time no hear, because it's radio, right? Unless you want to watch on streaming, on AFA streaming, you can do that. We got the show live now on AFA streaming. Just go over to streaming.afa.net. No, I was gone for almost 2 weeks in the Holy Land, the land of the Bible in Israel. My parents lead a group, a tour group over there once a year. We had 153 people, three buses of 153 total people. And we toured the entire Holy Land, all the places mentioned in the Bible. We went to the Sea of Galilee, we went to Jerusalem, we went to Bethlehem, the Jordan River, the Dead Sea.
Capernaum.
Capernaum, yep. All the places mentioned in the Bible there in Israel. Very special trip. So that's a bucket list trip. So if you haven't been to the Holy Land, I want to encourage you. Bobby and Denise have been, and
hoping to go back.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I've gone. This was my sixth trip, and every time I go, I learn something new. It's truly an amazing trip for the believer to take a pilgrimage over to Israel, and we have Israeli citizens that are our tour guide, and they're Christians. They're Christians, and so they're presenting the sites from a truly biblical perspective and a Christian perspective. So that makes it unique as well. So we were there for about 10 days, and it's good to be back on my own turf in the States. They call it overseas. Everybody calls it the States. That's what foreigners call the U.S., but good to be back. Hey, we are in Psalm 65, continuing our study of Psalm. We're in Psalm 65, and David says in the first four verses of Psalm 65, he says, "Praise is due to you, O God, in Zion, and to you shall vows be performed. O you who hear prayer, to you shall all flesh come. When iniquities prevail against me, you atone for our transgressions. Blessed is the one you choose and bring near to dwell in your courts. We shall be satisfied with the goodness of your house, the holiness of your temple." So David's speaking to God and really describing God in judicial terms. He says, blessed is the one you choose and bring near to dwell in your courts. So view God as this mighty judge, this all-powerful judge. That's what God is. That's who God is. And but David concludes this first few verses. He concludes verse 4 by saying, "We shall be satisfied with the goodness of your house, the holiness of your temple." So the question comes about, especially in the world today, where do we find true satisfaction? And there's a difference between, you know, we've all heard people talk about the difference between joy and happiness and satisfaction. There's quite a difference. And many, many people can find temporary happiness in very worldly things, but the question always comes about, you know, where do we find ultimate satisfaction? And David says that's found in the Lord. That's found in his temple. Ultimate satisfaction is an eternal satisfaction is found in the temple of the Lord, according to Psalm chapter 65. We're going to have a couple guests on later in the show. We've got a returning guest, Dr. Richard Urso, board-certified physician, also one of the original frontline doctors. He's a scientist and an inventor of an FDA-approved wound-healing drug, and he also worked in oncology department at MD Anderson Cancer Center as well. So we'll have Dr. Urso on to talk about this World Health Organization and this so-called treaty or agreement, depending on which lawyer you talk to, that they're trying to enter into with the Biden administration. This is some pretty overreaching stuff. So we're going to cover that with Dr. Urso. Also, in the last segment, we'll have on Dr. Renita Moon. She'll be on. We're going to talk about technology, youth. She's a pediatric physician, by the way. And we're going to talk to her about this, you know, this social media epidemic, the technology galore, you know, smart device in everybody's hand. I mean, we're going to talk about that and, you know, how that affects people's health. Because one thing that's really percolating now is this whole TikTok discussion, which we'll talk to her about. But this is a much broader topic worthy of consideration than just one app called TikTok. This one I've by the way, I do want to mention there's the shooting that just took place the last few hours in Nashville at a Christian grade school, and we're going to follow that and maybe bring some more information on that to you, but we just don't know a lot now. We know that there's multiple deaths. Let's just say that. There's multiple deaths, including children. So very, very tragic situation in Nashville. But we don't know motive. We don't know any details about the shooter. So we'll continue to cover that. One thing I wanted to make sure I got to this first segment is this Wall Street Journal poll. I mean, this is gut-wrenching. What is produced in this Wall Street Journal poll that was conducted in conjunction with the University of Chicago, by the way. But this is, you know, pretty much all the topics we discuss on the show and on the network here have to do with the state of American culture and where we are spiritually, where we are as a nation, where we are as a people. And this poll pretty much sums up what we call the culture war. And a lot of people kind of shy away from this recognition of a culture war, but boy, are we in it. And it's really a battle over what we call right and what we call wrong, which is a spiritual battle. So listen to this. This is just out today. From the Wall Street Journal, this poll they conducted. Patriotism, religious faith, having children, and other priorities that help define the national character for generations are receding in importance to Americans. A new Wall Street Journal, University of Chicago poll finds. Listen to this. Some 38% of respondents said patriotism was very important to them. And 39% said religion was very important. So this is today. But listen to the results from 1998 when the Wall Street Journal first conducted this poll. That was down sharply from when the journal first asked the question in 1998. At that time, 70% deemed patriotism to be very important. 62% said religion was important to them. So 38% now say patriotism is important, down from 70% in 1998. Religion, the importance of religion in people's lives is down from 39% to 62%. This is another difficult one to grasp. Childbearing. Having children, raising children, multiplying. Listen to this. In 1998, 59% of respondents said that having children is important to them. It's a priority for them. This year, 2023, only 30% of respondents said that they cared or having children was a priority to them. Another topic that was covered in the survey or the poll, community involvement. And this one took an interesting turn, if you will. So in 1998, when this poll was first conducted, community involvement stood at about 47%. So basically half of the country viewed community involvement as important. That jumped up to 62% in 2019 under the Trump administration, and now it's down to 27% in 2023. 27% of respondents viewed community involvement as important. And money, though. Money is the only topic that trended upwards as far as percent of significance amongst the respondents. In 98, 31% of people said money was a priority to them. Now 43% define money as a priority in their life. So I saw this, and this just sums up where we are, folks. I mean, this is shocking, but not shocking. We have a nation that is just on a moral decline, and it's right in front of our eyes. We talk about it all the time, but you know, this is what happens when you have a people that just turn their back on God. They turn their back on God. They say, we don't need God. We have ourselves. We have money. You know, we don't need children. Who needs children? And there's movements now that promote not having children. So it's one thing, you know, for people individually to say, you know, hey, I'd rather just have three children, or I want to have seven, or whatever. You know, on their own volition, through their own processes to come up with that determination. But you've got like movements now that are promoting not having kids. And this is the most really unnatural move. I mean, what we see now is we see multiple areas of society and groups of people that promote very unnatural things. Very unnatural. And of course, if it's unnatural, then of course it's unbiblical. And so we have, you know, entire groups of people and organizations that promote immorality, that promote sexual immorality, that promote sodomy, pedophilia, adultery, fornication. I mean, we got entire groups of people that just cheer that stuff on. And then now we've got people talking about how great it is to not have kids. How great it is to not have kids. I mean, these are the very things that Scripture speaks directly to. That Scripture speaks very directly to. And having children is one of the fundamental tenets of obeying God. It's one of the fundamental tenets of creation. One of the most natural things you can do is have offspring. And deep down, we all have a desire somewhere inside of us, whether you know it or not. We all have a deep desire to have children. So, and some people, you know, for different reasons are unable to have children. But deep down, God created us. The natural order that from Genesis is for us to procreate. And then patriotism, being proud of one's country, being patriotic. That was once a very noble thing. Now it gets shouted down. These are all very important things that make up a culture, that make up a society. And right now, they're all under assault. And let me just tell you this. If we don't reverse this trend, there will be no America. We'll be back in a few.
The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. What is the proper role of government? Romans chapter 13 outlines government's function, and it is basically this: to restrain or to punish wickedness and to reward righteousness. Government was never intended to be our savior. Government is our servant. As we focus on our civil occupations and our civic engagement responsibilities, let us never forget that government is not our God. We don't put our trust in it. We put our trust in our Christ. As a result, what we want is a government that stays out of our way and leaves room for our church to do our business of fulfilling the Great Commission.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hello, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. As many of you know, Hurricane Ian devastated southwest Florida late last year, making landfall as a Category 4 hurricane and leaving tens of thousands of families in need of help. Hurricane Ian caused over $110 billion of damage, but today we're excited to announce that 8 Days of Hope 19 will take place in Fort Myers, Florida from May 20th to the 27th, bringing much-needed relief to these families in need. We'll be focusing on roofing and drywall, mechanicals, painting, and so much more. If you love to use your gifts to serve those in need, we invite you to join us. It's free. We provide the food and lodging. Everyone is invited regardless of your skill set or your age. If you can't volunteer, we invite you to pray for this outreach. Pray that the families we serve would see God glorified as we rebuild their homes. For additional information regarding this rebuilding trip and how to get involved, please visit 8daysofhope.com. That's 8daysofhope.com.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I'm Corey, and this is my story. I was going through some financial troubles paying off my credit cards. I was paying high interest rates, and it just wasn't getting any better. And I knew I had to do something. So my mom told me about Trinity, and so I decided to call. Trinity was able to do something that I couldn't. I'm paying off my debt, I'm saving thousands, and things are really looking up. I promise you guys, you will not regret it when you call Trinity, because it was such a relief and less stress in my life, and it was the best thing I could have done for myself, because once I called Trinity, they took care of me, and I felt such a relief, a weight off my shoulders, and they are a Christian-based company. I love it.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
I'm Corey, and I'm debt-free for keeps.
1-800-788-1813.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the program. Continuing our discussion from this Wall Street Journal poll. By the way, if you want to listen to the show, we're on AFR.net. We got the AFR app out there as well. Both of those are free. No gimmicks, no tricks. Don't even ask you to fill out anything. You can go to AFR.net or go to the AFR app and listen to the show. One thing you will need to do if you want to watch the show is log in or create an account over at AFA Streaming. Streaming.afa.net is where you can watch the programming. And, of course, we've got programming really throughout the day. We've got various programs, talk shows that are on AFA Streaming Live throughout the day. So go ahead and go over there, create a free account, and you can log in and watch all kinds of great content there at AFA Streaming. The URL for that is streaming.afa.net. But, you know, back to this discussion of the moral state of America. The more, you know, as a young dad, and the more I read and cover the state of America, the more convinced I am that the only way to pivot this, for this to pivot, the only way for this these negative trends to turn the other way, is from the household. From the parents. And parents truly are the first line of defense. Parents truly are the first line of defense. And I really think this, honestly, this really doesn't get enough attention. the effect that parents, both the positive and negative, by the way, we're not just talking about positive effects. The positive and negative effects that parents can have on their children is highly underrated or highly undervalued, let me say. And why is it undervalued? I don't know. Maybe we just got our priorities out of order. And I'm speaking to Christians here, all right, folks? But parents out there, especially ones who profess Christ and pledge allegiance to the Bible, and yes, it's still okay to pledge allegiance to things. We got to get it together. We got to get it together. This culture, this parental culture of selfishness is just eating away at America's families. And I'm gonna paint with a broad brush today, and I'm gonna step on some toes, and people are gonna get their feelings hurt, but that's okay, because we've all been there at once. But this culture, this adult culture, it's one thing for a 2-year-old to say mine, 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 and display their sin nature of selfishness because they don't know better. They haven't been trained in the ways of the Lord. But I'm talking about adults here. There is a heavy dose of selfishness that is pervasive amongst American adults, even in the church today. I mean, think about this. This entire trend of waiting until you're 35 or 40 to have children, not because you're having medical difficulties or you're having trouble conceiving, just because you don't want to have kids at a young age, at a what I call quote-unquote young age, which 40 years ago was an old age to have children. But just this alone, this waiting, intentionally waiting to be fruitful and multiply until you're 35 or 40, that entire mindset, folks, is one of selfish ambition. And we kind of float it around and talk about it like it's not a big deal, and it's just, well, you know, it's just it's your preference, and you know, do what you want to do, and you know, and we kind of couch it as this like we're at a buffet or something. But when you kind of dig into it a little more and you start asking questions and you start saying, so why don't young people want to have children in their early 20s or in their late teens, when they're 18, 19, fresh out of high school, college, maybe they get married young. Why don't people want to have kids at that age? Well, when you start kind of digging into it, the vast majority of the excuses relate to, well, I want to get my career started. Well, I want to travel, you know, I want to travel the country. You know, well, I want to go ahead and get my doctorate. And you can go through the list of reasons. But it really all is centered around self. It's really all centered around self. And so this is how we're going to have to turn this around, folks. Is we're going to have to start with the household. We're going to have to start with parents and begin to train up new generations, not just one generation. This is going to be a multi-generational battle, but we're going to have to, over the course of multiple generations, and this is just a little side note, we often want and expect things to turn around overnight. We live in an instant satisfactory society. We live in a society that wants instant satisfaction. We want to put XYZ in the microwave, and 30 seconds later, it's how we want it. And if that doesn't happen, then we throw our hands up, we get frustrated, and we turn the other way. But you got to think, this survey, I mean, even this Wall Street Journal survey, you know, math wasn't my strong suit. So let's do the math. All right. We're in 2023. The first survey was put out in 1998. So 25 years ago, it took 25 years to get American people to go from valuing patriotism at a 70% rate to get that down to 38%. It took 25 years. Now, some say that's a long time. Some say that's not very long at all. But definitely wasn't overnight. It took 25 years to get to reduce the number of people who value having children, to get it to go from 59% to 30%. 25 years. So these are truly generational battles. These are truly generational battles. And look, these are not some of these you can say, well, honestly, none of these are amoral. I was going to say, you know, some of these you put in the biblical realm, some of these you can say are cultural trends that aren't necessarily tethered to Scripture, but you look at love of one's country, pride in one's nation, especially a nation that's built on biblical values. Of course, religion, having children, bearing children, community involvement, like being salt and light, having an impact on your culture, on your community, and how you view money. These are all tethered to Scripture. They're all tethered to a biblical worldview. And they really tell us who we are as a people. So that's my challenge. That's my challenge to parents out there, is to step it up, to step it up. And I can say that cause I am one. But you know, we gotta heavily invest in our children, heavily invest in our spouses, heavily invest in our families. That's the surefire way that we can see these negative trends turn the other direction. That's the way. And we often have a really inaccurate perception of what's important in the lives of our children, and we want to say, you know, social media is pulling them in the wrong direction, and public schools are pulling them in the wrong direction, and their peers are pulling them in the wrong direction, and Hollywood, and we use all these big terms, and we really place our problems way far away out of our control, and we just can't do anything about it. But that's just not true. That's just not true. Because everything I just mentioned, which I'm not saying that those things aren't a problem, all right? I'm just telling you they're not the problem, okay? And it's easy to go, well, Netflix is bad. They put out bad stuff. Oh, Disney. We don't need to go to Disney because they're putting out woke, you know, movies with homosexual characters in it. Well, Washington, D.C. is Biden. Biden is bad. Washington, D.C. is bad. You know, so-and-so's teachers, you know, teaching them bad things. And you could go through the litany of excuses. But on the vast majority of these examples of our children being, you know, impacted or influenced in the wrong direction, well, who's in charge here? Who's letting their children watch Netflix? Unsupervised, by the way. Whatever they want to watch. Who's letting 12-year-olds have a smartphone, which why don't they call it smart? I have no idea. Cause it can't do everything, but these little, what they call smartphones, who's letting the 12-year-old have the phone completely without any type of standard, any type of barrier, any type of a guardrail, just unfiltered, whatever you want to do on that device, have at it, 12-year-old. All right, who's letting, you know, their young people go spend the night at people's houses that we don't even know who they are? Like, we might not even know the name of the parents. And we're just Go on, you know. So we got to kind of reclaim, as parents, we got to reclaim this authority. And it's really not necessarily because other people have taken it from us. It's because we've just neglected to take hold of it. And yes, there is a move afoot to undermine parental rights. I'm not naive about that. That's a very, very persistent threat. The cultural Marxist and the government actors are always looking for ways to wedge their way in between parents and children and who has authority. That's a real battle. Also, the cultural players out there, your entertainment industry, that's a real problem. And we talk about it all the time. You know, these companies like Disney and Netflix producing this disgusting content that has no place in American entertainment, that's a real problem. And we ought to talk about it. And we should let these companies know that we're not happy that they're producing the garbage. All right? But when all that's said and done, we cannot misplace our priority and our time spent complaining about things that are very, very hard to influence and neglecting to provide utmost attention to the things that we have direct control over. Direct control over. And so that's my challenge to parents today, is just get a hold of your family, of your situation, and do every single thing within your sphere of influence to ensure that your children are taught the Word of God, they are taught to fear God, and they are taught to flee from evil. I mean, that's pretty much the mandate for parents in this nation and around the world, is to do that, because we owe it to our children. One other thing I want to get to before we end this break. I want to play clip one here, Bobby. This is U.S. Congresswoman from Florida, Kat Kamik, and she's a congresswoman from Florida. And she's talking about the threat and the issue of TikTok and how it's basically digital fentanyl. Let's listen.
Chu, as you know, testified that, look, they do take security and these threats seriously, that they have restrictions and abilities to try and protect our young people. Do you buy that?
No, absolutely not. Their entire algorithm is based on a behavioral algorithm, which is different than, say, Facebook or Instagram. What their algorithm does is it's based on how long you're viewing a particular video, and then it matches you up with people across the country and across the globe that share your attention span to that video. In order to keep your attention, they keep showing you more graphic and shocking videos. That's contrary to, say, Meta, which is focused on what you like and who you follow. So it's basically digital fentanyl for your brain. It's designed to keep you engaged while simultaneously harvesting your data, your biometrics, your location. And this has long-term national security implications, which is why Congress is so concerned. We have deep, deep reservations about the Fourth Amendment violations that are taking place, as well as the First Amendment violations that are taking place. Because what this allows the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, to do is they can censor, they can silence, they can divide, they can show you things that aren't real and make you believe that they're real, and then they can subsequently deplatform you. It is truly a threat to U.S. national security, which is why this is a hugely bipartisan effort now.
So that's Representative Kamik from Florida calling TikTok digital fentanyl. Can't argue with that. You can't argue with that. When you look at the effects on the mind and the body that these social tech platforms have, and how they keep you coming back and they keep you coming back, and they feed you what you want, almost like an addiction, you can't argue against that. You can't argue that that's not the case. And we'll discuss this more in the next segment, this whole topic of social media, the internet, these smartphones, and how it's just captivating the attention of our young people and not necessarily for good. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
For Forget about Facebook.
The last 10 days, we've been banned twice. And is unbanning a word?
They put us under the ban. Christians and conservatives
don't need to YouTube.
Banned one day. Banned again.
AFR programs are now live streaming on the AFA streaming app. Now you can get shows like Today's Issues straight from the source.
Put back on the next.
Just say unbanned.
Unbanned.
Just search AFA streaming or visit streaming.afa.net to sign up.
Dear 1 million moms, I've always thought that maybe your organization was making a mountain out of a molehill. But today, I cannot believe what I just saw on my TV.
Concerned about the trash flowing into your home through today's media that simply will not censor itself? Make your voice heard. If you see trash in the media, tell us. Use the Submit Trash button at 1millionmoms.com. That's 1millionmoms.com. And thanks.
Let's be real. Retirement is expensive, and inflation is making it even harder with the cost of everything going up from pet food to a dozen eggs. Wouldn't it be great if the cost of your health care could go down? Well, MediShare 65 Plus is $99 a month for ages 65 to 74. And for many with Medicare Parts A and B, looking at other options, that's 50% or more saved per month. No gimmicks. It's $99 a month, and you can use any Medicare-approved doctor or facility, and you get 24/7 access to telehealth from the convenience of your home. Better yet, MediShare is a Christian nonprofit organization. It's a community that'll pray for you and encourage you. And since we've cut out the middleman, you get to keep the savings. Call now. You can learn more about MediShare 65 Plus. Here's the number, 833-45-BIBLE. That's 833-45-BIBLE, 833-45-BIBLE.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Sometimes we get so tired, we just lose hope.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
Hope in life itself. A guy named Elijah experienced that kind of bone-crushing tiredness. He'd been in conflict with a political leader and his wife. In fact, the conflict was so bad that Elijah gave up hope for life itself. In the midst of all that, he sensed a small voice talking to him saying, "There are people who share your same values and feel the same way you do, and I know who they are." In other words, don't lose hope. Jesus still does that today. As we tell him about our seemingly impossible situations in which there is no hope, he can still speak to us with a small voice, giving perspective and hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, just type in At the Core. Click the subscribe button or the little plus icon, and then you'll get the podcast queued up wherever you listen to podcasts each and every day. I do want to introduce our next guest to continue this discussion of youth and what is influencing youth. We have on with us Dr. Renata Moon. Dr. Moon is a board-certified pediatrician who has been doing or has been in this field for over 20 years. Dr. Moon, welcome to At the Core.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, Dr. Moon, I've been talking the past probably segment or two about what is exactly influencing youth in America. And, of course, you know, one of the primary influences on youth is their parents and those who are raising them and upbringing them. But then beyond that, you have, you know, the cultural influences or the entertainment influences. You have the education influence on young people. But What I think is becoming dominant, and it clearly is technology and the influence of technology on young people. What are you seeing as a pediatrician? What are you seeing with like these young people? And I'm talking like 8, 10, 12-year-olds and technology.
Yeah, so I have to start with a disclaimer, and that is that my views are my own. I don't represent the views of any employer or other entity. I'm speaking out because I really have seen horrific things happening to our nation's kids. And these things started with the rollout of the cell phones back in the kind of the early you know, 2013, 2014, our emergency rooms literally began to fill up with kids suicidal, cutting, depressed, anxious. And I directly think that the cell phone use and the social media is what is harming them. And so we're seeing kids as young as, you know, 8 years old, even younger. I mean, really, as young as they can be to hold a gadget in their hands, right? And they're addicted to these things. They can't put them down. The influences on them are terrible. They've lost their, many of these kids coming to our offices have lost their joy, honestly, and their dreams for a future. I've seen a whole generation crushed by this technology.
Yeah, and it really, Dr. Moon, it really gets at, you know, the whole, our whole purpose in life. You know, what is our purpose? That's a grand question. What is our purpose? And if some young people find their purpose in technology and these social platforms and getting X amount of likes for every picture they post, I mean, this really sets them up for failure and misplaces their priority as far as where they find significance in life and really sets them off towards a dangerous path. I do also want to get your opinion, and you've been speaking extensively on this transgender movement, especially amongst young people, and really the cultural move to teach children that they can change their sex, even though we know they can't. What are you seeing as far as this trend on the what they call gender affirming care and the pushback surrounding it?
Yeah, getting extremely worried about it. I'm coming from a West Coast state, which is on the forefront of all of this, right? So seeing a lot of kids in the office, have seen recently a lot of kids in the office who are gender confused. And when you sit down and chat with them, for the most part, you know, they're doing this because it's a trend. I'm just going to call it what it is. You know, I've had siblings come in and they both want to gender convert. I've had kids as young as 3 and 4 years old being brought in by families who are gender changing them. And they assure me that this 3-year-old is making their own decision. You know, it's gotten to the point where it's terrible. You know, what we're doing to these kids is terrible. I think we all come to this from, you know, a feeling of love and support for the extremely rare child who truly may develop a gender confusion issue as they get older. But this is not that any longer. This has turned into what I can best describe as a trend, with some studies showing that as many as 20 to 30% of children, teenagers in certain areas are now reporting gender confusion. That's nothing more than a trend.
Yeah.
And I worry about doing things to them that are, you can't undo. You can't undo a surgery later if they change their mind. You can't undo hormones that come with side effects and really bad things that can happen as a result of them. You know, what exactly are we doing? And that's the question we need to ask ourselves as a nation.
Yeah. Yeah. We're destroying some of these children. We're destroying them for a long time. I'm not going to say permanently, although the biological and the medical procedures are very, very gruesome and some of them irreversible, as you mentioned, but we're definitely setting them up for a very, very tough life. Hey, Dr. Moon, the turn, if you will, in recognizing someone's mental or emotional or physical issue, let's say gender dysphoria, for example, traditionally with diagnoses, you typically recognize that someone is going through something, and then you try to kind of walk them through a right way of viewing things or a proper way of handling things. But with things lately, specifically gender dysphoria, we've gone from, instead of recognizing it and then, you know, counseling them towards their true biology, their true sex, how God created them, and really training them to affirm that, we've gone straight to embracing the disease or embracing the disorder.
Yeah, I'd like to focus on, I look at my own experience. So I started practice in the late 1990s, and I had a very busy pediatric practice down in Texas, actually. And I can count, I think I sent one or two children a year per year to see a psychiatrist. It was so rare to have a child who needed to see a psychiatrist. I would walk in and see patients, and they were, you know, for the most part, smiling and happy, and they had plans for the future, and life was really good. And flash forward to, you know, the last year or two, we are seeing kids that are so profoundly harmed in terms of their mental health that it's a national catastrophe. You know, kids with hair in their faces, they can't string a sentence together. They won't look you in the eye. You ask them what they want to be when they grow up, and they have no idea. They really have no hope for the future. And, you know, I now send sometimes multiple children a week to see a psychiatrist and to access the mental health system. So my question is, what in the world are we doing? We have healthy, healthy kids out there, healthy bodies.
Yeah.
And to give them the idea that you can convert this healthy body into a body that's going to need injections and permanent surgery in a quest to do what exactly? You know, if the mental health of our kids was better as a result of this, then I think we wouldn't necessarily even maybe be arguing about it. But the mental health is not better. Their mental health is extremely poor. We have a number of these kids now who've grown up and who are, you know, who are detransitioning or trying to. And, but you can't put back what was taken off.
Yeah.
You can't undo what was already done. And we need to put a, we need to sit down as a nation and just say, what in the world are we doing?
Yeah. And on that note, you know, about, children, I've got to ask, because you're interacting with families and patients every day.
Yeah.
But what are you seeing like with parents? I mean, are they there? Are they not there? Are they there and on the wrong track? I mean, what's this trend? Because this all starts somewhere. What are you seeing with parents that are with children in these situations?
You think specifically in terms of the transgender movement, or
this overall troubled youth generation that we have of depression, anxiety, and then of course with that comes gender dysphoria. Drugs, alcohol. I mean, the list goes on. Where are the parents?
Yeah, it's a good question to ask. I think honestly, we're seeing the breakdown of the family unit, right? So we're seeing that parents no longer have a support system from their parents, from the grandparents, from aunts and uncles to help raise kids. We're seeing kids who are being toilet trained much later in life than they should be, to the point where it's now difficult to train them because they've learned to pee in a pull-up. You know, I've seen 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds who are completely healthy who have yet to be toilet trained because no one has taken the time. And so they're literally changing their own pull-ups, but it doesn't bother them to pee in their pull-up. You know, things that we didn't see 20 years ago because we had people that could help parents parent. It's not easy to be a parent, and I don't fault the parents, but they're being hit by propaganda. They're being hit by these inappropriate social media apps, which is basically propaganda. All I think in an attempt to destroy the family unit and to destroy what parenting should be about, which is to guide your child in a way that makes sense, so they grow up to be as healthy physically and mentally as they can possibly be. And instead, parents are being bombarded by this stuff on social media as well. And many are listening to it. You know, the idea that you have a beautiful, healthy 3-year-old and you're somehow going to change them into, you know, from a boy to a girl or a girl to a boy and not cause them profound harm in the process is ridiculous to me. To be doing that to a child that young is child abuse, in my opinion. And, you know, we've really strayed as a nation to start helping parents be strong and build that family unit back.
Absolutely. Hey, Dr. Moon, do you have a website or social media, any way that our listeners can keep up with you and follow your work?
Yeah, I'm part of Global COVID Summit, which is online if you wanted to look us up. But we are in the process of launching some pediatric videos, and we will have an email there where people can email us. So they can reach out and communicate with us. So hopefully more to come with that. But I don't have a great email right now
for you. Sure. So. That's global covidsummit.org, yeah. And we'll drop that URL on our website. Yeah. Hey, Dr. Moon, thanks so much for coming on, sharing your thoughts on the issues of the day, and I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, thank you. That's Dr. Moon out of Washington State, and Dr. Renata Moon, board-certified pediatrician, 20-plus years of experience, talking about what our young people are going through. I've got this report. This has been out a while. This goes back to 2019, and this is not new, if you will, but definitely newsworthy. And it's talking about the effect of social media on cosmetic surgeries. And you read that and you go, what? But how on earth does these social media platforms have anything to do with cosmetic surgery? But listen to this. This is from Psychology Today. The popularity of social media and photo editing has had a significant impact on the field of cosmetic surgery. In 2017, for example, a survey of facial plastic surgeons found that 55% of surgeons reported seeing patients who requested to improve their appearance in selfies. Half of the plastic surgeon doctors out there said that patients came in asking to improve their appearance in selfies on the internet. And there's different names for it that these doctors call it. Some of it call it like Instagram face or Snapchat face, but it's basically where
vanity.
yeah, like these people go in, these patients go in and ask for to get their face worked on purely and solely for social media purposes. But Bobby, did you know that social media, that it was causing a surge in plastic surgeries?
Oh, no question. I mean, that's the other thing facing this generation is everything is about what their persona is. And if it's tarnished, grayed, what have you, it's earth-shattering to them.
Yeah. So. These doctors, Bobby, call it Snapchat dysmorphia. And it refers to the psychological phenomena of patients bringing filtered selfies to their surgeons to illustrate the desired surgical changes they want to achieve. Despite these observations, the role of social media use as a driver for cosmetic surgery is still not entirely clear. This from this article. So there was another study published that looked into this actual relationship between social media use, the Snapchat generation, and plastic surgeries. They found an increased engagement in social media correlated with an increased consideration for cosmetic surgery and more so with the use of certain applications. Instagram, Snapchat, for example. Folks, we got a lot of issues facing our country today.
Yeah, we do.
And I can tell you one thing, it all boils down to whether we embrace God's design for humanity and His Word, or whether we wholeheartedly reject it and seek the ways of the world. We'll be back next time with more of The Core.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.